Boom, what up? Hello, bonjour, and hola, real leaders. This is Kevin Edwards, your host here, and I am so excited you're tuning in to one of our amazing experiences. What you're about to hear is going to be fresh, real, and loaded with inspiration, guaranteed to support your impact journey. So sit back, enjoy the listen, folks, share a review afterward, and always keep it real. 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Real Leaders Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Edwards. Alongside us today, folks, we've got the Senior Vice President of Aligned Climate Capital. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Eric Lee, all the way out in Burbank, California today. Eric, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
It's always great to catch up with someone you meet at a conference, someone who kind of shares your interests, your values. But impact investors, man, they always fascinate me. You know, how they think, how they got into this space, what maybe their thesis is. So before we kind of go into all that, I want to learn a little bit more about just what drew you to this space. What drew you to alternative investing, impact investing?
Yeah. So for me, I'd say I dedicated my whole career to the space, and I got my entry into the space actually from my master's program. So maybe about a quick background. I went to Cornell for my undergraduate, studied biology and business. After kind of my senior year came around, I was really deciding what to do with my career. I was trying to look for a way to marry those two fields of study, bio, business, more like the ecology science side of it, with kind of the practical business elements that come with the business study. Talking to a lot of advisors and professors at the time, they introduced me to this field of sustainability. And for context, sustainability back then was more of a buzzword. It wasn't really defined. It was kind of a marketing term to get people excited about something that may be aligned with their values. But I was really hesitant to kind of dedicate a whole career to something that wasn't really well-formed and shaped. But long story short, they recommended me to a program at Columbia University. So I was fortunate enough to apply and get into their Master's of Sustainability graduate degree. And I think that's where my kind of whole world was shaped around this whole, how do you do good with your career? How do you have a meaningful career, and how do you make impact, right? So as a sustainability management student, obviously climate change is top of mind, and that was a personal passion for me. So during my graduate studies, there were like a big philosophical question I was asking myself, like, how do I have outsized impact with the work I do? For me at that time, there were two clear paths. There was the policy angle, working for governments, working with large companies to kind of enact change from top down, for them penalizing them when they're doing something wrong, rewarding them to continue to get, you know, enable good behavior, or go to the investing route where you kind of do values aligned, putting capital into things that you are passionate about, you believe in, and having no guilt at it at all. So for me, you know, I quickly realized I'm not going to have $1 billion at my disposal to be throwing at, you know, climate change. But I did realize that I could be part of a bigger financial institution. I could be part of organizations that manage millions and billions of dollars and direct capital into companies and projects that I myself find, you know, very aligned with. So for me, I started off my career in the public equity space, doing ESG investing when ESG investing was early days. So this is more like proxy voting, stakeholder engagement, reviewing companies based off disclosure scores. Realized I needed to be in the private markets to do more kind of the impact work that I was looking for and trying to satisfy. So I switched over to the world of private debt, doing emerging market ESG impact investing in that world. And then most recently, now with the line, been with them for a little under 4 years now, doing venture and infrastructure deals, all within the realm of climate.
Well, thanks for giving us a brief overview, kind of the background, kind of what led up to the current position that you're in here at Aligned Climate Capital. of certainly aligned values there that you share with the organization. Give us a little background on the organization itself and the current role that you're working in now.
Yeah, so Align Climate Capital, we're a mission-oriented, mission-aligned investor. We are out to kind of help solve climate change. And we do this by investing across two asset classes, which is venture capital, investing in early stage startups and early stage companies, as well as infrastructure, where we're backing kind of the picks and shovels of the clean energy transition. So that may include EV charging stations, solar projects, battery storage projects, things that people could actually touch and feel and interact with. You know, there's a stat out there produced by Bloomberg that the clean energy transition will require $50 trillion for us to be able to kind of meet our goals. And that's an immense amount of capital. And just like thinking about that number alone, I think people could get overwhelmed and intimidated. But for us, we view it as a great market opportunity to, you know, one, get kind of superior returns, market rate returns through the investing activities that we do, but also kind of creating great impact, both environmentally and socially. So that's kind of what Align does in a nutshell.
And Eric, one of the key things that I'm pulling from your earlier response is that you said you want to have more of an impact in the private debt space as opposed to the public equity markets. Could you tell me how? I mean, because my mind would go to, oh, well, maybe I could have a larger impact at a larger company. What about the private sector did you like more?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think, you know, candidly speaking, you could have impact in both spheres and both sides of it. But for me, on the public side, you know, there's, you know, blue chip tech companies, the Googles, the Apples of the world, where you may be able to invest, you know, anywhere from $1 to $10 million, but like that really doesn't move the needle for them. Like it's a drop in the bucket relative to the amount of capital and, you know, how well resourced these organizations are. So like your voice relative to the entire stakeholders that they're managing, it's very small. Contrast that with the private markets, where one, you're directly working with the companies themselves. A lot of times you have access to the management team directly, you have access to the C-suite, and your capital holds a lot more weight. Private debt is a little different from venture, which is different from private equity and all that. But just broadly speaking, the private markets, I think you could be a lot more hands-on. There's a lot of opportunities for you to sit on the board of these companies as well, and to influence the leadership of the teams, think about the right things, challenge them to do better, and help kind of strategize an action plan for them to create more impact, right? So that's kind of my perspective and what drove me to transition from public to private markets.
Got it. Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. And what a great experience. And when you obviously Align Climate Capital seems to be, I wouldn't say obviously, but much more active, right? There's active and passive investors. You seem to be much more hands-on in guiding those decisions. I want to learn more about the companies you're investing in. How do they see their impact? I mean, rooted in the technology, let's say like with solar, you know, it's certainly something that is an alternative, you know, form of energy. Do the founders see this as impact, or do they see this as just traditional business and growth?
I think the beauty of this whole climate space is that a lot of the founders have the same values and same mission as most of the investors that are intentional in this space. So there's not too much education or, you know, values aligning that we need to do up front. Like, they got into this space because they found a problem, climate change being the biggest one, and they wanted to do their piece in kind of doing good for the planet, right? So they've developed this company. A lot of our company founders are kind of subject matter experts of the respective fields they're coming from, whether it's the EV space or the clean energy world or the building efficiency sphere. And they just want to grow and scale that to kind of have their own legacy, and leaving their positive footprint on what they do. So for us, you know, that kind of conversation is free flowing, very easy to do. With regards to just generally speaking, the impact of the companies, there's this concept of collinearity, where as the company scales, of, you know, the companies we back as they scale and grow, their revenues will grow on scale, but also because impact is tied to their business model, their impact will grow on scale. So that concept, it's just like making sure that impact is integrated into the DNA of the company is a crucial tenet of our kind of evaluation process. So that's what we look for. And I'd also kind of say that impact is kind of measured and monitored, and kind of the metrics vary differently from company to company. So internally at Align, we created this concept of points versus sys, and I have to give a shout out to my colleague NECA who thought of this. But you know, when you're playing basketball, just as an example, you need people who score points to win the game, but at the same time, you need a lot of assists to win the game as well. And it's a team effort. Likewise, our portfolio companies are made up of, you know, companies that are directly fighting climate change. You know, they may be installing solar projects across the country. They may be installing EV chargers or batteries across the countries, and that's all great. At the same time, we do have also assist givers in our portfolio companies. And from our perspective, these are the software companies and the service providers that enable them to do their work more efficiently and effectively. There are a lot of times where the kind of metrics capturing of these may be a little bit more difficult and nuanced, but at a high level, fundamentally, that's kind of how we break it down.
That makes a lot of sense. And as you hinted to there, there's non-alignment, and it never will be an alignment, I believe, on impact metrics. I think it's like 60% of asset managers like agree on like one or two things about climate. When we did our impact awards, we asked about KPIs for impact, and then like there was just no singularity. So the one thing I will say about that though is funding is always, I think, in that same statistic, in that same regard, funding is very clear. It's very clear in why you fund a business. It is pure economics. It is pure looking at your profit and loss. Tell me a little bit more about, what is an attractive investment for you all? Is there a specific margin you're looking for in companies? Are the companies unprofitable to begin with? Tell me a little bit more about the economics of what your investment company is looking at.
So generally on the venture side of things, we come at to companies in the seed, the series B stages with the preference for the seed and A rounds. In terms of like how much revenue traction and commercializations that the companies achieved prior to receiving their funding, it's not a hard and fast rule, but I'd say generally rule of thumb, they have about $1 million of revenue under their belt already. And for us, that $1 million of revenue verifies a lot of things. One, there's a product market fit. Two, there's customers willing to pay for their products or services. Three, there's market adoption already. So it's not like a science project we need to be incubating and doing R&D for another 3 to 5 years before you're able to get money. And that's kind of one of our key tenets at the firm and strategy. It's we focus on proven and commercial technology. Not to say that, you know, deep tech, deep science is not important. It's tremendously important, but in terms of scaling impact now, we thought that, you know, investing and backing companies that are building things that we already see in the market. You know, you drive from San Diego to LA, where you are from where I am, you see solar panels, you see wind projects, and we want to scale that by investing in companies with innovative business models and kind of, a great business plan. In terms of kind of, we obviously have our portfolio targets and hurdles for each of the companies, and we want to stick to that. I'd also say on the impact side, in the past, I'd say 2 years, we probably evaluated over 2,000 deals. And quite frankly, not all of them meet the impact threshold or the financial threshold that we have for the companies. So we passed on a lot of them just because they were just not venture backable for their various reasons. So what we decided as a firm, and we wanted to be a thought leader in this space and challenge others to do well and do more as well, is we actually ended up donating 3% of our carry. And for those who may not be familiar with the term carry, it's essentially 3% of our profit going to three climate nonprofits or impact nonprofits in the space that can do work, tremendously meaningful work where venture capital money can't touch. So we announced that last year, and we're really proud to be able to do this. And so we, you know, are partnered with Impact Capital Managers, which is an impact trade association out there. We partner with the Honnold Foundation, which is committed around distributed energy, energy access for all in remote communities, and then the Climate Clean Energy Equity Fund. They're more on the policy, kind of building the policy landscape around the clean energy transition. So that's another thing I want to share with you, that there are ways, as you know, someone that's in the capital markets, do more. And it's just it takes you to think of outside the box and really align your values and putting money where your mouth is.
And a follow-up question on that would be, you know, is that, you know, if you have a company that comes through or that you're investing in that makes a decision to donate profits away, do you look at that as something that's good for the business, or do you see that as something that could potentially hurt the business?
I think generally speaking, it's a really good question. At the stage of business that we're kind of entering into the company, every dollar counts. The idea eventually would be, as they grow and scale, that they create programs similar. So for example, we have a portfolio company called Summit Ridge Energy. They're based in Virginia. They're a community solar developer that, you know, create solar projects across the US. One thing that they noticed as they were conducting their business as usual operations is that there's a shortage of electricians out there, right? There are certain regions and states that they want to be targeting, but they just can't hire the right people to build out the projects. So what they've done in turn is partnered up with local nonprofits and kind of workforce development programs and created a partnership to train people to get these kind of electrician skills, and then in turn hire them to be used in their projects and their development. So those are things that we could strategically think about. Like one of our portfolio companies, ChargerHelp, also adopted a very similar business model. There's this new emerging asset class of EV charging stations, right? Just 10 years ago, that thing didn't exist, right? So there's not many people that know how to deal with EV charging stations. So there needs to be a tremendous amount of growth in EV charging and a tremendous amount of deployment that needs to be taking place. But we just don't have the professionals to kind of be working and dealing with them. So ChargerHelp partners with local community colleges and other kind of organizations that help workforce development training. And they use the students of those programs and hire them internally to kind of build out and making sure that EV charging stations are up and running properly and sufficiently able to service the cars that come by for energy. Because quite frankly, about 60% of the public EV chargers are broken or malfunctioning at a given time. So it's unfortunate to see, and I'm glad that we're backing companies like this with a great business model.
I like that. Yeah, that would make a lot of sense to consistently have you know, technicians to fill the gap and the need that these products or services have. It's very similar to, you know, a lot of the other impact companies in the space. Like take traditional medicinals, for instance. You know, they are a CPG product. You know, they very much provide themselves on their organic supplements and teas. And what they do is, you know, they invest or donate really money to the villages that help you know, farm their ingredients. And so that donation then is a really a long-term investment, more so into the company, the mission and actions on its value. So I'm really picking up kind of what you're saying here. Now, one of the things that I had a question, I just wrote down, is let's say you had two companies, you know, you're seeing 5,000 companies a year. Okay. So you have two companies that are around both $1 million, but you said you kind of turn away the ones that may not be as impact oriented. Mm-hmm. What disqualifies an impact company in your opinion?
Well, we focus on companies that where we can really add value to the company as well. So kind of giving you a flavor of the world that we're coming from, our team is made up of, you know, investment professionals, but also people that have deep experience in the policy world, the government world, and all that. So we really want to be backing companies where we could help companies achieve their projected impact, right? Like there may be a lot of great companies out there that we just don't have the in-house skills to be helping. So we really align ourselves to be helping. You know, there's the Inflation Reduction Act out there that's pouring billions and upwards of trillions of dollars into the space. We want to be helping companies that we know that could access this capital to be supercharged and grow to the next stage to, you know, be deploying real solutions that we need in the world for the clean energy transition to be taking place. So there's a little bit of filtering based off what our skill sets are and what the company's business model is and how we could be best synergistic to one another. So that's kind of the perspective that we take.
Got it. And when you think about just like in your experience with these organizations, what makes like a good leadership team? When you're vetting, when you're reviewing these entrepreneurs, like what are some of the core common threads between these leadership teams?
I think when I take a look at our portfolio and see the companies that have been, you know, doing really well as of late, I think it comes down to the leader's execution ability. You know, as a startup company, you're going to be faced with a lot of difficulties that that larger companies don't really face. Cash shortages, employee turnover, retaining and maintaining culture, hiring the right people, shifting business models left and right as, you know, the markets change. And that's all part of business. But the leaders that really were able to overcome that and stay afloat and just really succeed on what they wanted to do is coming down to execution. And being able to be nimble and being able to pivot, you know, based off of their instincts and kind of the experiences that they've been able to accumulate throughout their career. I think that one thing alone is just like a key indicator that we look for when backing a company.
And think about like your own company. I mean, obviously, the last couple of years have been a difficult time to raise capital in any market. Now, public debt, like I'm not too familiar with kind of your sources of capital. Have you experienced the same challenges, of course, that anyone else has experienced in the past couple of years? And how have you gone about it?
Yeah, I think fundraising has impacted everybody across the board, regardless of your asset class, regardless of, you know, where you're investing or what you're investing in. Just macroeconomically, it's just been a challenging year. That said, I will say a couple things. One, a lot of investors who place their money with us, so our limited partners, like us because we have a tie to, I'd say, this policy and government world. I'd say from my perspective that the clean energy transition and the energy markets as a whole is probably the second most regulated market in the U.S. behind healthcare and pharmaceuticals. So that said, in order for you to be a good investor, you need to know how to navigate, you know, federal government, state government, local government, and really be able to connect the dots and help, you know, see the trends that are coming, see what's hype, what's real. And we bring that to the table. I think that's something that we benefited from during the turbulent markets. Secondly, I'd say that in the clean energy transition, a lot of our companies are essential services, right? So despite inflationary environments, non-inflationary environments, like at the end of the day, people need energy, people need fuel to go about their daily business and daily lives. So like, for example, I live in Los Angeles, you live in San Diego, probably you've experienced it if you drive a gas car, but during the past 2 years, you've seen some very high gas prices, right? Like $7 a gallon, $8 a gallon, ridiculously high, unprecedentedly high. And that alone gets people to think, like, from a pure financial perspective, maybe it's time to switch over to an EV, right? And therefore, the businesses of our portfolio companies are you know, just be able to grow because people are seeing that switch. There was a period, you know, last year where utility bills were skyrocketed in a period of like 6 months. Like for me, I've experienced it to go 2x, you know, 2.5x. And, you know, a lot of people during that time period were like, maybe it just makes sense to go solar, right? And I think we're at this tipping point where luckily in the industry and kind of the areas that we're focused in, it just makes financial sense. It doesn't matter what you believe in politically, where you stand on that spectrum. If you just look at it from a dollar to dollar perspective, solar is more competitive. You know, EVs are more competitive. And such a, the list goes on. Like, you know, you could t- talk about that for heat pumps and building efficiency. There's so many different use cases that I could talk about. So I think that really benefited our portfolio companies despite the rocky, turbulent environment. So all that to say, business development, fortunately for us, has been good just because they've been providing essential services.
Awesome. Good to hear that. And I want to touch on the differentiator, if you will, that you mentioned. Now, Aligned Climate Capital has multiple figures in the company who have served in both federal and state governments beforehand. They have experience in government, which you will never find me in. My question is this, is like, are they foreseeing that there's going to be some type of ESG disclosure? Or, I mean, to even go as far as what the EU is expecting, which is you have to kind of report these things to obtain a loan on your business. I mean, do you think that America will go that far?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, no one has a crystal ball, so no one's going to be able to predict the future 100% accurately. But we do see the trend going that way from our perspective. To your point, you look to our European counterparts, SFDR has come full swing, impacted a lot of fund managers, therefore impacting a lot of their portfolio companies. You see a lot of the SEC conversations around scope one, scope two, scope three disclosures. You see California trying to lead the way in terms of emissions disclosures as well for businesses within the state. So you see all the trends pointing that way. So we kind of had to prepare ourselves for that. Interestingly enough, like we have a portfolio company called Pulsora, and they are an ESG management tool that helps data collection, aligning with frameworks, reporting, and all that. We, as an asset manager ourselves, were looking for an ESG software tool to help us with kind of managing our ESG data. So this was about 2 years ago. We were in the market. We surveyed probably over 24 companies that were offering services in this space. Funnily enough, we came across Pulsora. We loved what they were doing and the services that they provided. So we essentially became not only one of maybe their first user, but also their investor. And the investment conviction came with the idea that this is going to be a real big issue moving forward, both from the compliance perspective to making sure that you're getting the data from the right places, from the right people. Like there's financial audits that happen all the time, and that's business as usual. That's norm. That's sadly not the case for like ESG data, impact data. And therefore you see a lot of greenwashing happening. You see a lot of people overstating what they claim to be doing in terms of the positive footprint they have. So we thought this was something that's going to be coming in the near term future. So that's just a little anecdote of how we viewed it and what that in action meant for us.
Yeah, and you, I mean, you have experience in ESG in the public equity markets from a while ago. Like, where have you seen this gone, and maybe your outlook for 2020, 5, 2028, 2030 when the UN SDGs are supposed to be landed.
It's an interesting question. I think, sadly, again, I think the term ESG has become overly politicized today. So I think a lot of people shy away from the term ESG just because it has a lot of negative connotations. But if you break it down in principle and what I view what ESG means, it's simply a risk mitigation tool where you're able to identify non-financial but material risks or opportunities linked to the investments that you're evaluating, right? And I'd also add that for us and for me personally, I separate the term ESG and impact. So for me, ESG is exactly what I said, a risk management tool. But impact is more of the positive footprint that our companies and projects have on both people and planet. Impact is what you align yourself to the UN SDGs to. Impact is kind of the GHG emissions reduction, the kind of number of clean energy generation that you've had from your portfolio companies and all that. Whereas ESG is more of like, how many injuries have there been at the company? Have there been any HR complaints? What's turnover? Looking more into the operational nature of the firm, whereas impact is more of the products and services that are intentionally trying to do good.
Right. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it aligns with your focus earlier of linearity. I think you kind of hit the nail right on the head there. So anyway, this is a really interesting time to kind of be in this space. And it's great to learn a little bit more about aligned climate capital. Just thinking about like the listeners out there who are, you know, listening to this episode right now, they're interested about growing their businesses. Like, what do you think are a couple of recommendations for them as entrepreneurs in this space that they could either take or at least look into to make sure that they can position their businesses to be, you know, attractive on the market?
Yeah, I think one of the more optimistic things is that entrepreneurs or founders in the clean energy space or the climate space have the benefit of there being a lot of funds out there, a lot of funds that's willing to take bets on early stage companies, VC, seed, and A companies. So in terms of just purely a numbers and chance perspective, it is likely that you will find someone to be backing you or at least taking a call to learn more about your business model and for you to share. I think for founders, one of the key things that often may go undermined is the power of networking, just meeting people out in the space, putting yourself out there, because you really don't know who you'll cross paths at all these industry convenings. And again, fortunately, that climate is a very hot topic these days, and there's a lot of events and a lot of people are kind of hanging around the hoop trying to meet more people. So I think it's a great opportunity for founders and leaders to kind of be there sharing notes, sharing thoughts, and all that. And I think one thing that, as I mentioned before, is just like a founder's ability to execute and be persistent and adapt into changing environments. Just don't give up. If you really believe in your product and service, someone else out there likely will be a believer in that too. It's just a matter of time for you guys to be crossing paths.
Well said, Eric. In all of this, what is your definition of a real leader?
It's a great question. I love that question. I think for me, a real leader is someone that is able to be humble enough to recognize their own failures and shortcomings and supplement themselves around a team and a community of people that can really help them shine. I think also a real leader, I love this concept of like servant leadership that like really sacrifices the needs of your own kind of desires and wants and all that for the sake of your stakeholders, whether that may be your employer, community members, your family and all that. Because I think that way you're able to garner the respect of people that you're trying to lead rather than demand it. And I think we have all experienced, you know, flavors of both. And I think a real leader is one that's humble and able to acknowledge their shortcomings and be more sacrificial in that sense.
Well said, Eric Lee. I'm Kevin Edwards asking you to go out there, serve others before yourself, but always keep it real. Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Pleasure.
Hey, Real Leaders, thanks again for listening to this amazing episode. And if you're someone like me who goes all the way to the end just to make sure I can extract as much information, education, and inspiration out of every single interview, might I suggest you check out our magazine. If you go online to realleaders.com today, you're going to get the first 30 days for free where you're going to be able to access all of our magazines, courses, and live events from some of the top thought leaders around the world. All you have to do is go online to realleaders.com and click the subscribe button in the top right corner to get your free 30-day trial right now. Again, that's real-leaders.com. Thanks again for being a real leader, and always keep it real.